I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Our press secretary gave alternative facts to that.
My goal in this deposition was to be truthful, but not particularly helpful.
Welcome to Unspun, the podcast that makes you better at finding the truth. The way people get news is changing. It used to be that there were many reporters who would research stories and write articles, but now politicians and famous people share information directly with you on social media and the internet. That means you find out things fast, but it's up to you to make sure the information's actually accurate. And newsmakers don't always do their part. The temptation to manipulate information is strong. They bend the truth to deceive so that they can avoid accountability, so that they can advance their agendas. When you recognize these agendas, you can sometimes find out what's real. And we're at a crossroads where anyone can share anything online, so it's important to sharpen your critical thinking skills. Finding that deception before it goes viral is pretty much a survival skill now, and we're gonna do it together. Let's get unspun. Hello, truth seekers, and welcome to this week's Unspun. In today's episode, we're going to get into how journalists relate to their sources, and in particular, the idea of access journalism. You know, we count on the media to find out things for us, but what kind of compromises do they have to make to get that information? Are you curious? We'll find out today. But first, if you're getting anything out of these episodes, I'd be so grateful if you'd take a second right here in the app where you're listening to me and leave a rating, and maybe even a review if you're feeling generous. Those ratings are one of the ways that podcast apps decide what to show to people, so your efforts help get more media literacy out there. Okay, on to the episode.
Sorry, you have a helicopter roaring in the background. Go ahead.
I don't hear you. Got to talk. You see that? You have a helicopter.
A little louder helicopter. A lot of noise.
I don't know what you know. You can't with a helicopter.
Sorry. What do you want to say, sir?
I can't hear you well. You have a helicopter.
That, of course, was the current president of the United States doing something he's very good at, capturing the media's attention. Honestly, I think a lot of people in the media were a little excited about Trump getting reelected, at least professionally. Although the Biden administration rarely put the president in front of a camera, Trump has often seemed willing to talk to the press whenever he sees them, even if it's in front of a noisy helicopter. You could say that Trump, as a political figure, gives a lot of access to the media. But is that access always in the public interest? There's something that media critics have been thinking about for a while now. There's been some pretty big cases where the relationship of sources and journalists has seemed kind of questionable. Have a listen to this clip.
Former Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein was extradited from New York to Los Angeles on Tuesday to face his second trial for rape and sexual assault charges. He is wanted for trial in Los Angeles on 11 charges ranging from 2004 to 2013.
That was a news story about a Hollywood figure being sentenced for some pretty egregious crimes. But the story isn't just about one bad guy, it's about a system that allowed him to get away with his behavior for decades. It's a story that really exposes the dark side of power and influence, and honestly, how the media sometimes just fails to do its job. So it all starts with Harvey Weinstein, an incredibly powerful Hollywood producer. You know, Weinstein was a titan. He was the guy behind Oscar-winning movies, and he could make or break careers. He was feared, he was also respected. But also beneath the surface, there were longstanding rumors of sexual misconduct. You know, it wasn't a secret in Hollywood that he was, as one source put it, a disgusting perv. For years, those rumors seemed to just be rumors. And for those years, journalists tried to expose Weinstein's behavior, but they were consistently blocked. For example, Sharon Waxman, when she was at the New York Times, did a story in 2004 about how Weinstein had paid off women. But a male editor at the Times killed the story because he didn't think it was important, saying that Weinstein was not a, quote, publicly elected official. New York Magazine reportedly also killed a similar expose. And this was a pattern. Powerful men protecting other powerful men, and it was considered a risk to publish stories about sexual misconduct against women. The problem was that women's stories were being devalued, and news outlets were afraid of lawsuits and getting ruined by powerful men, so it was easier to just ignore the rumors. So if you think about it, Weinstein's power protected him. It was really hard to take down someone who was on top. He had so much influence and control over the media, both fiction and news. And, you know, as one source notes, no one wants to do that because of the fear of angering someone who could hire you or option your screenplay or just ruin your career. And the fear was real. It wasn't until the Weinstein Company started to lose money and Weinstein's power began to wane that people started coming forward. When Weinstein became a little vulnerable, the opening emerged for stuff to rise to the surface. And then in 2017, the New York Times published a bombshell investigation by Jody Kantor and Megan Toohey. And this was a pivotal moment because they didn't just rely on rumors. They found evidence of settlements and convinced some of Weinstein's victims to go on the record. And it was the beginning of the Me Too movement. The reporting by Kantor and Toohey was so impactful because they didn't put the women in a he said, she said situation. Instead, they presented the women's testimony along with a mountain of evidence, including internal records and the financial trail of the settlements. And so this thoroughness made it harder to just dismiss the allegations. And because of this, they were eventually able to get prominent actresses such as Gwyneth Paltrow, Ashley Judd, and Uma Thurman to speak out about their experiences. Even that took time, and it required the journalists to build trust and to gather irrefutable evidence. As a story, this one's end is ongoing. Weinstein was convicted in California, but a conviction in New York was overturned and sent back for a new trial that's going to happen this year. Weinstein was ultimately brought down in California, but the larger issues remain. The story revealed that even when the media does its job, it can be hard to effect lasting change. You know, there were, and there still are, debates over the Me Too movement, the idea of whether it's gone too far, and what real accountability looks like. So the story of Harvey Weinstein is important because it shows how power can corrupt, how silence can enable abuse, and just how difficult it can be to uncover and report the truth, even when you think it's right staring you in the face. So this idea of access journalism, it's basically about prioritizing access to powerful people over journalistic principles like objectivity and accountability. It's a type of reporting where journalists might pull their punches or avoid tough questions in order to maintain good relationships with their sources. And this can be a real problem. It can lead to a situation where the media ends up acting more like a public relations arm for people in power than a check on the power that they have. Here's how it works. For one thing, reporters sometimes avoid asking hard-hitting questions or raising controversial issues because their goal is not to upset the source, so they'll remain accessible. In some cases, the source even gets to pre-approve the questions, so that means that the person being interviewed can control the story and they can avoid those potentially damaging questions. And this prevents those gotcha questions and makes sure they're all softballs instead. The source might even get to control how the interview is edited, which means they can just take out anything they don't like. So that's a lot of control, and it makes you wonder, is this even journalism anymore? It can be a symbiotic relationship that benefits both the journalist and the celebrity or powerful person because it calls attention to both parties. And so, access gets prioritized over journalistic integrity, and it leads to a situation where the media focuses more on maintaining relationships with the powerful than on holding them accountable. And in fact, access journalism is often contrasted with accountability journalism, which prioritizes that holding of people accountable. You can also think about the idea of lapdog journalism, where the press is seen as being too compliant with people in power, as opposed to watchdog journalism, where the press is vigilant and can actually criticize the power in society. So, you know, as I said, a key criticism of access journalism is that it undermines the media's role as a check on power. Because when journalists are more concerned with maintaining relationships than reporting the truth, that can hurt the public. And this was evident during Donald Trump's 2016 presidential campaign, when many media outlets provided extensive coverage of Trump, often without challenging statements that were just lies. I don't know if you remember this, but mainstream media outlets were in some cases carrying his campaign rallies live. And some estimates are that he received billions of dollars worth of free media exposure during that campaign. And so I think that highlights the way that access journalism can sometimes lead to the media being manipulated into giving a platform to people in power, even if those people aren't telling the truth. And this can distort the news and make it harder for the public to get an accurate understanding of how things are going. Ultimately, it's a form of journalism that prioritizes access over truth. And the problem with access journalism is that you get that system of mutual benefit where journalists get access and powerful people get favorable coverage. And when that happens, it's you and the public that loses. I need to take a quick break, but when I come back, we'll see some examples that come from other things besides the entertainment industry. I'll be right back.
Too many people are disturbed and worried about what's going on in the Trump White House. We need to wake up and address it.
Bob Woodward, legendary reporter for The Washington Post, is out with a new book that has President Trump enraged.
This idiot Woodward who wrote this book, which is all fiction.
This is a war on truth.
That was a clip from a reporter who wrote books about the Trump presidency with titles like Fear and Rage. His name's Bob Woodward, and that name is practically synonymous with Watergate. He's the guy who, along with Carl Bernstein, helped bring down President Nixon. But Woodward's story is much more than just that scandal. He became a journalistic icon, and as he gained more power, his career got more complex and controversial. So in the beginning, Woodward was this hungry, aggressive reporter at the Washington Post. He and Bernstein were assigned to cover a break-in at the Democratic National Committee headquarters, and they turned that into the Watergate scandal. It was hard work because they had to work around the edges. They didn't have access to Nixon's White House, and that was actually some of what made their reporting so good. The early part of Woodward's career was defined by his hard work, digging up secrets and holding the powerful accountable. Woodward's style of reporting was influential, and honestly, it inspired a whole generation of journalists, including me. But as time passed, Woodward's career changed, and he moved toward what kind of looks like access journalism. So, you know, this means instead of working around the edges, he'd get really close to the powerful figures he's covering, especially presidents. He'd get hours of interviews, he'd see documents that other people couldn't, he'd have these behind-the-scenes look at how decisions were made. For example, he got unprecedented access to the Bush White House for his books Bush on War and Planet of Attack, and he got many hours of interviews with President Bush himself. And some say he was seduced by that access and he didn't ask tough questions. This is where things get complicated. Some critics started saying he was becoming a stenographer to the powerful rather than an independent reporter. And they argued that his desire for access led him to go soft on the people he covered and made his stories too favorable. And, you know, one particularly damning example was the slam dunk incident in his book Plan of Attack, where he quotes George Tenet as saying the evidence for Iraq's WMDs was a slam dunk. Tenet later denied saying those exact words, leading some to believe that Woodward had been manipulated. There was also an incident with the Valerie Plame leak where Woodward admitted he knew about Plame having a CIA role, but he didn't tell his editors at the Post for more than 2 years. He said it was because he was protecting his sources, but some critics felt it was a serious ethical lapse. As you heard in the clip that started this segment, though, the people that he covers sometimes feel like he's too hard on them. So, you know, Woodward is still regarded as a respected journalist, and his career is a complex story that has a bunch of different chapters. But I don't think you can deny that he went from being an outsider to an insider, and that journey is full of accomplishments, but it's also full of questions. He's someone who's been both admired and criticized, and he brings up some really important questions about how journalists should navigate power. Now, when we talk about access journalism, it's not a simple case of good or bad. You know, there's different viewpoints on whether it's a necessary evil or a necessary problem that undermines the role of the media. On the one hand, some people argue that access is needed to get the story, and they believe that journalists need to cultivate those relationships with powerful people because they need to gain insights and gather information and understand their perspectives. And this is the insider journalism approach, where really high-grade information is traded for a platform to narrate a source's side of history. It's seen as a way of kind of composing that first draft. And that's a real trade-off between sources and methods, and some people believe this is the only way to get certain kinds of stories. So, you know, sometimes journalists believe they need to play the game to integrate with the press pack and, you know, become one of a group of reporters. But, you know, like I said before, a criticism is that access journalism undermines the core function to hold power accountable. So when journalists prioritize access, they're less likely to ask those hard questions or to challenge the statements from people in power. And so this can lead to some things, right? It can lead to an absence of demanding accountability. It can lead to avoiding controversial topics in order to maintain that access. it can lead to those pre-approved softball questions. And it can ultimately lead to the media just acting as PR for famous and powerful people. There's a real potential for the media to be manipulated by people in power if you get into that kind of relationship. And some critics even call access journalism similar to advertising that's just disguised as news. It blurs the lines between reporting and promotion. So this brings us back to the present day. I think the second Trump presidency is a story about a challenge to the established order and about how the media really struggled to adapt to it. You know, it's a story of alternative facts and bullying and a breakdown in the traditional relationship between the press and the White House. It also reveals a lot about the underlying problems in the media and how maybe they are too comfortable with the status quo and they're out of touch with the, you know, desires of large parts of the American public. I think it's fair to say that Trump has had an unconventional approach to the media. He doesn't play by the traditional rules of politics. Instead of working with the press, he sometimes just attacks them, and he labels news outlets he doesn't like as the opposition party, and he uses rallies and social media instead to communicate directly with his supporters. He openly deals with what many call alternative facts or outright lies. And this puts the media in a difficult position, because they've been used to being spoon-fed information by previous administrations, and they've never really had to deal with a president that has acted so dismissive and antagonistic toward them. So then we look at how the media has responded to Trump, and some news organizations, like the New York Times, have started to call out lies more directly, but overall, there was just a lot of debate about how to cover him. Some journalists tried to maintain access, while others argued that they needed to be more adversarial. And a bunch of news outlets continued to provide extensive coverage of Trump, even when they knew that his statements were not accurate. And he got those billions of dollars of free media exposure. His constant coverage without challenge, some people said, was a way of normalizing his behavior. You know, that term people came up with, sane washing. And a bunch of people in the mainstream media were really blindsided by the fact that Americans who had previously voted for Obama either stayed home or voted for Trump. You saw a lot of stories trying to kind of figure that out that involved, you know, really flattering portrayals of people sitting in coffee shops in the heartland, for example. Trump's administration also shut the door on some media mainstays like CNN. And to a lot of people, this seemed like a strategy to demand compliance as a condition for having access. But, you know, other people like Reuters editor-in-chief Steve Adler argued that losing access could be liberating, and that media outlets should instead cover the Trump administration as they might an authoritarian government abroad, emphasizing sources instead of access, going back to those methods that Bob Woodward did when he was working with Watergate. I feel like this whole period has highlighted the danger of a press corps that's too beholden to power. I feel like I would do you wrong if I didn't talk a little bit about the rise of misinformation and the cries of fake news. So false rumors and stories spread quickly on social media, and it makes it harder for people to know what's true. And so this made the need for accurate, reliable journalism even more critical. But the media also has to deal with the fact that many people have already made up their minds about some issues and just are not open to changing them. So the end of the story, kind of as it was with the Weinstein story, is ongoing, right? The Trump presidency has forced the media to confront its own flaws and biases, and it continues to raise questions about the role of journalism in a really polarized society. In some ways, it brings up the need for more diversity in newsrooms, viewpoint diversity, for example, and maybe also more in-depth reporting on issues that matter to ordinary people. Because there is a real risk that if media outlets are not radically rethinking their journalistic strategy, we're going to see the same mistakes made during the 2016 election, where we're pointing cameras at things that are interesting and we are broadcasting people and writing about people because they want us to, and that really is not helpful for the public. Now, entertainment and politics aren't the only places where access is an issue. And you'll find these issues frequently in coverage of sports, and it can be an issue at even the most local levels where a reporter locally doesn't want to get on the bad side of the mayor, for example. But there's common threads that run through all of these issues. And I think one big question we need to ask is, why are journalists so dependent on access? Is the problem that the journalists are compromising their ethics? Or is it that the public figures are making access too difficult? In the U.S. right now, some federal employees have been told they can't talk publicly about what they do at work. In my own state, in North Carolina, the government has made it a whole lot harder to access public records. So when I think about that as a citizen, am I okay with that? It's not always about the media cozying up to powerful people or celebrities. Sometimes it's just the nature of the job. You know, to break a big story, you need sources. And the more insider information you have, the better chance you have of uncovering something meaningful. Maintaining that access will come with strings attached, and this is where the ethical trade-offs get tricky. Because if a journalist gets too close to their source, they might feel pressured, indirectly or directly, to go easy on them, to avoid asking those tough questions, or to just show them in the best possible light. So, from the journalist's perspective, they always have to ask themselves, am I being objective? Am I holding my source accountable, even if it risks losing the relationship? And I'll tell you, when news was practiced mostly by big organizations like newspapers and TV networks, you'd have an editor asking those kind of tough questions. Today, you have a world of content creators who are going directly to the public with no filter. And we have to wonder, is anybody asking these questions now? So I think it's up to us. As media consumers, we need to ask those same questions about the stories we're reading or watching. So for example, if you notice that a journalist or an outlet consistently portrays a particular person or company or group in an overly positive light, or, you know, conversely, they just don't cover the controversial aspects, is that access journalism at work? Whose voices are being amplified and which ones are missing? Are they asking tough questions or is it all just softballs? Ultimately, access journalism isn't anything but a tool. It can inform the public or it can shield the powerful depending on how it's used. And that's why it's important for journalists and for all of you as media consumers to pay attention to how the craft gets done. Thanks, Truth Seekers. Have a great week and stay sharp. Thanks for getting Unspun with me this week. Unspun is a production of me, Amanda Sturgill, and is a proud member of the MSW Media family of podcasts. Send me your thoughts and ideas about trickery in the news on Gmail at theunspunpodcast@gmail.com. I even write back. And find this episode's show notes and more information at theunspunpodcast.substack.com. Want to learn more and get smarter? Check out my book, Detecting Deception, Tools to Fight Fake News, which is available on Amazon or your favorite online bookseller. And until next time, stay sharp, everyone.
Care Talk with Laura Packard is a podcast covering healthcare in America from a progressive perspective. Our healthcare system is broken, and we all know insurance companies are out of control. If you don't have health insurance or don't understand the differences between insurance plans or have surprise medical bills, out-of-control prescription drug costs, or can't get the care you need, listen to Care Talk with Laura Packard weekly on Tuesdays. What's going to happen to your healthcare under the Trump administration? From prescription drug prices to health insurance costs, from healthcare for seniors and people with disabilities to reproductive care, from care for veterans to public health, including vaccinations. Healthcare experts answer your questions every week, and they go in-depth on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, private insurance, and more. Go to healthcarevoices.org/caretalk or search for Care Talk with Laura Packard on your favorite podcast app to listen today.